This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Earlier this month, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers picked up and detained three people in Vermont who've been vocal advocates for the rights of migrant workers. All three are involved in the group Migrant Justice, and all three are in violation of federal policies that relate to their immigration status in this country. Alex Carrillo Sanchez, Zuli Palacios, and Enrique Balcazar have been in federal detention in New Hampshire, and yesterday they had a bail hearing at the JFK Federal Building in Boston. While they and others awaited their hearings, a couple hundred protesters gathered in the rain outside, chanting their support for migrant workers. Inside the courthouse, where the chanting could still be heard, federal judge Paul Gagnon granted bail for Palacios and Balcazar, but denied bail for Carrillo Sanchez. Speaking outside the federal courthouse yesterday, fellow migrant justice activist Brendan O'Neill was disappointed.
To be honest, it is about the worst result one could expect for someone who's a father with a daughter, a Vermonter, and a friend, and a hard worker. It's a difficult result.
Later in the show, we'll be hearing from the lawyer representing Carrillo Sanchez and the others detained. First, though, we have VPR reporter Kathleen Masterson with us. She was reporting from inside the courtroom in Boston on these hearings. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for being here.
Hi, James.
I mentioned the three people who were detained by ICE in Vermont by name, but can you give us a little more context into their lives and who they are?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, they're all activists and all associated with migrant justice. Enrique Balcazar and Zuli Palacios are both more full-time. Enrique is affiliated with the organization. He was a dairy worker before. He's been in Vermont about 7 years. And for the last couple of years, I've been with Migrant Justice, but before that, worked on multiple dairies in Vermont. Zuli is in the country on a J-1 visa, which is usually for people with cultural exchange or research, academic reasons, and she had overstayed that visa. She has become involved with Migrant Justice over the past year and has been a real vocal advocate as well. And then Alex, he is married to a U.S. citizen, is in the process, of filing that paperwork to apply for legal status through that relationship. And he is also currently a dairy worker in Vermont and has been affiliated with Migrant Justice as well, though he's not full time with them.
So all three of them were picked up by ICE in Vermont, and they have been being held in New Hampshire. Yesterday was a bail hearing. Can you describe how the hearings were run yesterday in Boston?
Yeah. So it was on the third floor. The room, it's a small room, about 20 people can fit, and they were pretty strict about letting in. Some press, and then there were some clergy folk in there who were just there to be supportive, and Alex's wife and 4-year-old daughter, as well as his wife's grandmother, were also in the room. It's pretty intimate. The lawyer kind of sits right up by the judge's bench, both lawyers, I should say, defense and prosecution, and the candidates are actually still held in detention in New Hampshire, and they are patched in on teleconference. So a camera and microphone is aimed at the judge, and then the judge can see and hear, all three of the detainees are sitting there in, a beige kind of prison garb in the detention center there in New Hampshire, and they can be questioned. They do speak through an interpreter, so the judge doesn't actually address them until the end of the hearing. It goes back and forth between the lawyers and the judge. It's fairly informal. Each one gets a chance to present, but then the judge may interrupt and ask some questions. And they really didn't do any cross-examination of the detainees. They just asked them at the end, do you understand what you're being charged with? So it was really up to the lawyers to make their case and answer any questions, and the judge then ruled.
And there were additional cases beyond the three Vermonters who have been detained, but there was one judge for all of them, one Department of Homeland Security attorney representing the government, and one attorney representing all of the detainees that were being questioned yesterday. Is that correct?
There was actually one additional attorney who represented three people before it got to the folks that Matt Cameron, who works with Migrant Justice, represented.
Hmm. Okay, thank you. So walk us through what happened in Alex Carrillo Sanchez's case. What did the government argue?
Sure. Well, he had been charged with a DUI in Vermont. That case was later dismissed, but the Department of Homeland Security Council argued and read from that police arrest report. So they pointed out things that that Alex had, where the car had come to a stop, it was 30 feet up over the curb. The airbag had deployed. They mentioned that at one point he had sort of not been able to take the breathalyzer, but at a later point it measured 0.12. So they used all of these sort of descriptors from the DUI charge, from the police report, to say that they didn't think that he should be released because they viewed him as a public safety threat. So his lawyer defended him and was mentioning how tired he was and how it was at the end of a shift. Didn't deny that there was alcohol involved, but pointed out that the state had dismissed that case. But the Department of Homeland Security said, we still think he's a risk. And the judge did agree. The judge said, when criminal cases have a different burden of proof for DUIs, but in his case, the judge said that there was clearly indication that he was very intoxicated, and the judge did not feel comfortable releasing him. So the judge actually took what the Department of Homeland Security had suggested should be a $21,000 bail, and the judge changed it to no bail, meaning he'll be held on detention.
And in the two cases of Palacios and Balcazar, they were heard separately. But since they were actually arrested together in one incident and their information was somewhat similar, there were some details that sort of crossed from one to the other. So what did the government argue against them?
Sure. Well, first, just to know that they were driving together. Enrique was driving with a driver's privilege card, so he was legally allowed to be driving the vehicle. And Department of Homeland Security, again, read from that ICE arrest report and noted that he initially refused to stop the vehicle, to pull over the vehicle, and they eventually kind of boxed him in with four different ICE vehicles. That's Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. And then they noted basically that they called it resistant to arrest. He asked questions, certainly mentioned his right for a lawyer. This is Enrique. But they were concerned. They mentioned that Zuli refused to hand over a cell phone. And then when they later did get the cell phone, the officer said that it was recording and being broadcast. So there was concern there. They also said that they refused to get out of the car and that Zuli, in fact, had to be unbuckled by an officer. So the state was basically, Department of Homeland Security was arguing that this resistance did make them somewhat dangerous and put the officers in danger in that moment.
Was the government, Kathleen, sorry to interrupt you, was the government arguing that any of that was illegal to do, like having a cell phone, or just that this noncompliance was a safety threat?
Yeah, they said mainly that it was a safety threat, and Matt Cameron, their lawyer, brought up that argument saying, I believe in the right to record. And so there was not an actual dispute whether that was legal or not. But the judge did agree with the Department of Homeland Security in saying that it is putting law officers in danger to not comply with their requests, and that any people's rights can be addressed after the arrest. He framed it this way, and he actually included in his talk to both Zuli and Enrique afterward via the translator. He said, please be aware that noncompliance with officers' requests can put both of you in danger, and he stressed the importance. So he did chastise them on that, but there was no indication that speaking up or recording the event were illegal. That didn't actually come up.
I'm talking with VPR reporter Kathleen Masterson, and we're going over some of what happened yesterday in Boston when three people who've been detained by ICE in Vermont had a bail hearing. So, Kathleen, the judge, as you said, warned Palacios and Balcazar, but he did grant them bail, and they posted bail, right?
Yes, I believe they did post bail last night. It was being gathered and put together in the proper office in Massachusetts. And he determined, after hearing from their defense attorney about their ties to the community, Matt Cameron handed over a stack of nearly 200 letters, including one from Bernie Sanders, about how they had such strong ties to the community. And the judge agreed with them, with the defense lawyer, that they would not be a flight risk. Even though the Department of Homeland Security actually did suggest that the community support could mean that if they were trying to flee, that they would have some folks who'd be willing to help and, quote, aid and abet them. But the judge ultimately ruled that they were not a flight risk and they're not a public safety risk, so they were allowed to be reduced on bail. And the judge made it more, you know, what the court would call a more reasonable amount of $2,500 for each Azuli and Enrique.
So while all of this was going on inside the federal building in Boston, outside there were protesters, and VPR's Rebecca Sinanis was reporting on their efforts. Rebecca joins us now. Hi, thanks for being here, Rebecca.
Hi, Jean.
You observed these protests outside. Can you talk a little bit about what motivated people to be there for a, what is essentially a custody hearing?
Yeah, so I was curious about that, too. There were people from Vermont and Massachusetts. And what people really said is that they wanted to show solidarity and demonstrate that these people aren't a public threat, that they are very much a part of the Vermont community. And they wanted to make sure that that was seen outside of the courthouse.
Seen outside of the courthouse, but it sounds like they were actually loud enough to be heard inside the courthouse.
Yeah, so they marched all over City Hall Plaza, but at a certain point they positioned themselves directly under the judge's office window. They made the announcement that they were doing that. They pointed up. They said, look, three flights up, you can see that window, and we're talking directly to them. And I would say at that point, there was up to maybe 200 people. They rolled out a banner that was maybe 15 feet long with thousands of signatures petitioning for the migrants' release. There were people from Migrant Justice. There were people from the Massachusetts ACLU, religious leaders from both states. So there were a lot of people, and I think that they were trying to talk directly to the court to say that these people were part of their community.
And Kathleen, you were inside the courthouse. Did the protesters get noticed within the proceedings?
Yeah, it was interesting to hear about that timing because right about when Alex appeared on the TV camera, so his hearing was about to start, the chanting did seem to get louder at that point, which was interesting. And the judge did make a comment, you know, what's all that noise? It's kind of distracting. That was his word. And Matt Cameron, the defense lawyer, you know, said thought it was great that people were exercising their right to free speech and supporting the candidates. And he pointed detainees, and he pointed out that this was just another show of support from the community, but the judge did not seem to he didn't weigh that particularly from what I could tell, and he proceeded to explain that he found it quite distracting.
Rebecca, I was talking to Kathleen about the results in these three cases, that two were released on bail and one was detained. The protesters had been out in the rain for many hours by the time these results became known. What was the reaction outside?
Yeah, so by that time, the crowd had gotten much smaller. And I would say it was a mixed reaction. They decided to wait to, you know, the results came in one by one. But as a group, they waited to make the announcement until all three decisions had been made. And they told the crowd, they started by talking about Alex's detention. And that was, I think, very hard for the crowd and for Migrant Justice because I think they were expecting better. They said this was sort of the worst case scenario and they were not expecting that. But they were really heartened by the other two decisions. So I think it was a mixed reaction. But after about 5 hours of standing in the freezing rain, I would say that morale was not high.
VPR's Rebecca Sinanis, who reported yesterday from outside the federal building in Boston. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
Kathleen, before we let you go, you're on a cell phone, which people may be able to hear, and you're in New Haven, Vermont today. You've been out reporting on a story about ICE this morning. What are you working on?
Yeah, it's a slightly separate story, but looking at, you know, what exactly has happened with Vermont's Fair and Impartial Policing Act, how has that been implemented in the state, and what are the different relationships that both state police and other officers have with ICE agents? Vermont has some pretty strict laws on the books about not asking about someone's immigration status unless it is relevant to the case, and certainly not detaining people just for ICE. Just if ICE says, hey, if you see this guy, can you hold him for us for 2 days? That's actually been litigated a fair amount nationally and can be a Fourth Amendment violation in some cases. So Vermont police are working on this, and I'm just taking a look at how it's actually looking in the field.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing that story. Kathleen Masterson, thanks very much.
Thanks, Jane.
We've been hearing about what happened at the federal courthouse in Boston yesterday, where three immigrant rights activists from Vermont had a hearing about their detention. They were picked up by ICE in two separate instances nearly 2 weeks ago. Coming up, we'll hear from the lawyer representing all three of them. Hey, podcast listeners, you might have heard about this whole tripod thing. All this month, we're asking you to help a friend try a new podcast. Think of someone special in your life, then recommend a show that's right up their alley. If they're new to this whole podcasting thing, you can walk them through the steps to listen and subscribe. Then please share your recommendation with the hashtag tripod. That's spelled T-R-Y, pod. That way we can all get some new recommendations. And thank you for spreading the pod love. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We've been getting the details of a hearing in Boston yesterday for three activists from Vermont who were detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement for violating U.S. immigration policies. Zuli Palacios and Enrique Balcazar were pulled over and arrested together. The judge yesterday released both of them on $2,500 bail each. A third activist, Alex Carrillo Sanchez, was not given bail and remains in federal detention. All three of them are represented by attorney Matt Cameron, and he joins us now. Matt, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Jane. Good to be with you. Thank you.
I also want to mention before we start that we tried hard to get Immigration and Customs Enforcement to come on the program today. The agency declined, but they did provide a statement which reads in part, "Our operations are targeted and lead-driven, prioritizing individuals who pose a risk to our communities. Examples would include known street gang members, child sex offenders, and deportable foreign nationals with significant drug trafficking convictions. To that end, ICE's routine immigration enforcement actions are ongoing, and we make arrests every day. If ICE officers encounter others during the course of their lawful duties who also have immigration issues and regardless of their criminal history, those additional encounters can lead to an arrest at the time of the encounter." Matt Cameron, I hear a reaction from you. What are you thinking?
That's outrageous. That completely conflicts with what the government told us yesterday, and it completely conflicts with what's in the arrest report. I have the arrest report for Zuli Palacios in front of me, and she was, I'm just going to read this to you. The agent writes, "I learned that Palacios was the subject of an HSI, that's Homeland Security Investigations, Counterterrorism and Criminal Exploitation Unit lookout." Now, there's no explanation provided for this. There wasn't yesterday either, and certainly if my client were a terrorist or gang member, then I feel like that might have come out at a bond hearing. That was the government's opportunity to say that. There's an extensive five-page report here in which they detail how they found her and tracked her down. And that was based completely on her overstay of a J-1 visa, which is a student exchange program visa, essentially. She'd only overstayed it about 8 months. And I've never heard of anyone being tracked down, not just by HSI, but by HSI Counterterrorism and Criminal Exploitation Unit. There's something else going on here. And they
like what? What do you think is going on?
Well, I'm not going to speculate, and I think we're going to get some discovery in the future, and we're going through proceedings.
Well, you can't say, I think something else is going on, but not speculate.
Okay. Well, I will say that the government acknowledged that a lot of this was based on a tip from a concerned citizen. We have reason to believe that ICE has been investigating migrant justice for some time, and at least investigating its members and leadership. And I think it's probably pretty obvious to anybody listening that that's totally inappropriate for a community-based justice organization that is trying to fight for better labor standards and for working conditions for farm workers, for ICE to treat them as if they're some sort of organized crime organization. And it's really outlandish.
New England spokesman for ICE, Sean Newdower, told us over email, "ICE officers conduct targeted arrests of criminal aliens and other immigration violators. ICE does not target individuals based on political beliefs or activism." That's a direct quote from his email. So you don't believe that?
Ask John Lennon. Ask Emma Goldman. I mean, they certainly do. They have throughout American history. There's no question that the immigration system, I mean, from the very beginning with the Alien and Sedition Act, I don't mean to get into a history lesson, but the immigration system has always been used to enforce political beliefs and ideologies. And certainly they have to say that because we've put the burden on them at this point because all of the evidence points to a politicized investigation.
Listeners, talking here today with Matt Cameron, attorney representing all three migrant worker activists who were arrested in Vermont. Let's go to Paula calling in from Enosburg Falls. Hi, Paula. Go right ahead.
Hi. Oh dear, I just I live in Franklin County, and Franklin County depends on dairy farming. We have lots of dairy farms still left, and I just want to give a context to this. We've had immigrant workers on dairy farms since the late 90s, so I'm just so sad at heart listening to all this, because we're such hypocrites. We live in these communities, and our economics basis depends on the hard work of these immigrant workers, and yet they have to stay in the shadows, and we don't talk about them, and it's just so frustrating, you know. So I've sat in committee hearings in the legislature just as a citizen, so I've seen Enrique testify, and I know he's no threat to anybody, and that he's a brave and concerned, you know, part of the community. It's just so difficult. We need a legislative ability for year-round migrant workers to work just the way we have seasonal workers, and our legislators did draw up legislation, and New York legislators supported them, and so on. There was good legislation, but the Republicans in the Congress don't want to pass immigration reform. So it's totally frustrating, and it's very sad. So
Paula,
I just wanted to say that.
Thanks for your comment. Appreciate hearing from you. Matt Cameron, you know, Vermont's delegation has long advocated for some kind of visa that would allow farm workers to work on Vermont dairy farms legally with a visa. And the sticking point seems to be that these would be year-round workers, unlike, for example, apple pickers who come frequently from Jamaica and work for a season on Vermont farms and then go back. But so, barring a legislative solution to this, how do you argue on behalf of people who are in the position that these three Vermonters that we've been talking about are in, when it's not a question whether or not they have overstayed their visa or are in violation of immigration conditions? That's, as I understand it, admitted. So what's the argument to keep them in this country?
Yeah, I believe it's a matter of priorities, and I completely agree with what Paul is saying, and I know that Migrant Justice has been saying that for some time. I know that the Vermont federal delegation is going to be meeting with immigration sometime soon to discuss these arrests and the many other arrests in Vermont, because it's a question of where we want to put our resources, where our values are, where our priorities are. You know, if we had unlimited resources and we could actually deport everyone in the United States, we could actually collect and round up and send them out, then I suppose we'd do that. But the fact is we have 5,000 ICE officers and 12 to 16 million undocumented people. And if you're going to start prioritizing, as the Obama administration did, at least on paper, if you're going to start deciding who stays and who goes based on those just very pragmatic realities, you're going to have to target people who are more dangerous to the community than Vermont farm workers, than Massachusetts farm workers, anybody else in New England or anywhere else. And I should mention for people who aren't aware that there was a similar action just a few days ago, I believe on last Tuesday, when five farm workers were picked up, including Jose Coyote Perez. My client certainly stands in solidarity with him and his arrest. He's been in custody for some time, I believe, already. And, you know, this is, again, people who are speaking out on behalf of farm workers' rights. And as Paula said, we have this population that is serving a very important need in Vermont and all over the country, and is doing very, very hard work for all of us so that we can enjoy this food.
But the argument could be made that these three individuals in particular made themselves visible. And so, you know, whether that question of being targeted because they were activists or why, we don't have an answer from ICE other than the statement that they gave us. But these people were in violation of U.S. immigration policies. They got picked up. Why not continue those deportation proceedings given that they were in violation?
I find it disturbing that you would say that someone, and not you, but someone making this argument would say that they made themselves visible by fighting for fair standards and for better safety practices and things that are actually saving lives in Vermont and around the country. Especially someone like Enrique, who would never have been, and I really want to emphasize that, ICE isn't just going around at random picking up undocumented people. He had no prior contact with immigration or criminal authorities, and he never would have been a target. And he was told he was a target back in September. He was told directly that he should expect that he would be a target, and he didn't change anything about his life, to his credit. He's a very brave man, as Zuli also, two of the bravest clients I've ever had.
Matt, what happens to those two next in particular? They were granted bail. So what's next in this process for them?
I understand they'll be returning home to their friends by this afternoon. And welcome back. They'll be placed on the non-detained Boston Immigration Court calendar, which is pretty busy. And, you know, we'll take it from there. We're talking out the further steps. I want to consult with them. I don't want to talk too much about what's coming next. But I will say that we have serious issues with these arrests, with the way these proceedings have been conducted, and we want to raise those with the judge to begin with.
Do you know who paid their bail?
Migrant Justice is, you know, they have an amazing community. They always come together for their people, and they support each other. I think that money was ready to go.
Bail was denied for Alex Carrillo Sanchez, so he remains detained. What happens to him next?
He'll remain in custody, and we are immediately preparing to file a marriage visa, which I hope to have out as soon as today. And that the government has agreed to actually expedite that visa. That would often take 4 to 6 months to be approved, and we might have it approved within the next month or two with government help. They will do that for anybody who's in custody. But approval of that marriage visa is just the first step for a very long road back.
So will he remain detained for the entire time that that visa is being processed?
For the expedited, yeah. My hope is that it would take an expedited basis, probably 3 or 4 weeks to get that processed. And then he'd have to accept a voluntary departure to Mexico because he came without permission originally. So you actually have to process the visa in Mexico. There's no way to do it here. So to do the final step. So there are a number of other things that are going to have to happen as well. And it's, you know, I think many people assume that you're married to a U.S. citizen, you have a U.S. citizen child completely dependent on you, that it must be an easy green card, but it's nowhere near.
So let me just go through what those steps that you just mentioned, because I'm not sure that everybody knows that that is what the plan was for Alex Carrillo Sanchez. So you will be applying for a marriage visa because he is married to an American citizen. And you say he's actually saying he would take a voluntary departure and go back to Mexico for the duration of how long it takes to process that visa, because he would have to come back into the United States from his home country.
Right. And it's not just the visa. The fact is, and this is something else I don't think many people realize, but as soon as someone who's been in this country for more than a year leaves the country, you're automatically not allowed to return for 10 years. That's just a flat 10-year bar for return. It's an extremely harsh punishment that Congress introduced in 1996. And there is a waiver for that, and we're going to work to put together the best possible case for that waiver. But none of this is guaranteed. If he'd been released on bond, we would have actually been able to do almost all of the process in this country with minimal separation and minimal hardship to his family. But that's not going to be an option now.
So, okay, so you're going to try to get that 10-year ban waived. What's happening with his family in the meantime when he's back in Mexico awaiting all of these steps?
There's some very difficult decisions that have to be made there. I don't want to speak for them. They're going through, obviously, a really hard time right now.
Matt Cameron, why do you do this work?
Well, I find it to be as personally rewarding as anything a lawyer can do. I went into law to try to help people individually, and this seems like the most direct way to do it. I went to law school in Newark, New Jersey, which has one of the most interesting and diverse immigrant neighborhoods in the country, and really fell in love with the people and the issues that I saw around me and really wanted to be involved. I live here in East Boston, which is Boston's traditional immigrant neighborhood. Got a three-attorney practice here, and I live and work here, and I'm very committed to the Central American community in particular. But I guess the short answer is it's not for the money.
Matt Cameron represents the three activists from Migrant Justice who were recently detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Vermont. Zuly Palacios and Enrique Balcazar were released on bail at a hearing yesterday. Alex Carrillo Sanchez remains in custody. Matt, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for this coverage. Really appreciate it.
I also want to point out again, we did try to get a representative from ICE to come on the program today. They declined to be on the program, but did give us a statement, which we read part of. Listeners, if there's a comment you'd like to add to this conversation, leave a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us at Vermont Edition. And follow Vermont Edition in NPR One for all our latest content. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed this program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.